Manuscript Releases, Volume 5, Numbers 260 to 346. MR, Number 272. Miscellaneous Manuscript Materials. Ellen White's Visit to Canada. Arrived at Battle Creek about noon, then commenced to prepare or have others prepare for the journey to Canada. Could get no one to go with me and father, and I went alone. I had not been able to eat anything from Sunday noon until Tuesday noon, and then only a very little. The journey on Grand Trunk was much easier than anticipated. We arrived at Montreal about 11 o'clock, stopped at a hotel that night. Next day at about noon, arrived at Sherbrooke. We here took the stage for Magog, 16 miles. Oh, what a barren, rocky country. Poverty, poverty reigning everywhere. We reached the campground about 2 hours before sundown. The meeting was small, about 100 tents on the ground. There is excellent material here, and we think a good work can be done with proper efforts put forth. Nearly all are poor who have embraced the truth. I spoke Sabbath afternoon and Sunday to a large crowd that came from Waterloo on special trains and also on boats. I had great freedom in speaking to the people, and all seemed to be highly gratified. There had been a strong effort made to pass the Prohibition Law, but failed. Their headman said, "If Mrs. White could have spoken in the cities when a few weeks ago the question was agitated, they would have carried the day." They said they never heard anything by any speaker equal to that discourse on temperance. The Bordeaux say that a great victory has been gained to them in Canada in favor of the truth. Had we not attended their camp meeting, it would have been a fearful discouragement upon the cause and work in Canada. I never saw a people so grateful for our labors as in this place. Tuesday morning, we rode in stage 16 miles to Sherbrooke, took cars for Portland. I was sick all day, but my cold is better now. Father is now having this cold and is almost used up. We reached Waterville, Maine, Wednesday noon. This gives me a little time to write, but my poor heart forbids my doing much. We think our Canada meeting was a very important one. We wait here, Stillwell Junction, until 9:30. Get upon the ground about midnight. I am sure the Lord has heard and answered my prayers. I left the Alma camp meeting sick. I had a high fever all night and all day Monday. Yet we went to, and the doctor told me it was certainly not my duty to go to Magog. He said much now depended on me, and I should feel that the cause of God demanded that I should keep myself in the very best condition for labor. He made so urgent a plea, I really was on the point of giving up going, but I thought I might have fully as wearing labor to remain, as Father was anxious to go. We were 2 days and two nights on this trip. We had to wait several hours at Sherbrooke for the stage. They loaded on a very large barrel of alcohol, several boxes, and any amount of bundles. Our two large trunks and hand baggage, and we stowed ourselves in amid all these, and rode 16 miles to Magog. When we came upon the ground, the meeting was in session, but they gave a loud shout of victory. There was a joyous welcome for us. We found our tent well furnished, floor and carpet, upholstered chairs, washstand and two beds, one for Elder Butler, one for Father and me. This was an excellent meeting. I was not well any of the time. My cold was very severe. The discharges from my head were fearful, yet I labored carefully and did not break down. I had very great freedom in speaking. The Lord has sustained me. On Sunday there was a large company assembled, and I was never more free than upon this occasion. Those who came to hear were enthusiastic over it. They had been making an effort to put down the licensing of liquor selling. They failed. They said, "If Mrs. White had come there a week before and spoken in their cities, they should have succeeded in putting down the sale of liquor. They said they would have given her $25 a night. I found here it would have been a terrible disappointment if I had failed here. I feel sure this was my duty." We gave great encouragement to the Bordeaux's. The man who owned the ground was out to hear. His mother was out to all our meetings, and will, we think, keep the Sabbath. She gave me $0.50. She sent $1 to Sister Olmsted, Brother Kellogg's wife's cousin, for sending her the signs. She said she had not felt that she could have much interest in the Old Testament, but the articles coming through the signs had made dark things so plain. She was interested, and sees a new beauty in the Old Testament she has never seen before. She had considerable to say in reference to our faith. She seemed to be one in spirit with us. Her son is the wealthiest man in Magog. We had to here meet a party, true immersionists, and a party of these spasmodic ones who consider that religion consists in a noise. They shout and bellow and foam and act like men bereft of their reason. This was called the power, but I told them there was no religion in it. It was a spurious article. This is modern sanctification, but it is as opposite to genuine sanctification as light is in contrast with darkness. We had the privilege of presenting the true sanctification before them. Our testimony on these points was very much needed. Satan will be willing a people who profess to be keeping the law of God should represent themselves before the world in words and deportment as fanatics, for this disgusts unbelievers. And they cast the truth and the fanaticism in the same scale and count it of the same value. The Lord keep his dear people from fanaticism and heresies that are so prevalent everywhere. 42, 1880, pages 1 to 4. To dear children, Willie and Mary, September 22, 1880. The Civil War. I saw that Brother A. Ross must be cautious of his words. He has not regarded slavery in a Bible light. He does not see it as God sees it. Brother Ross has expressed himself unguardedly and has exerted a wrong influence. He is watched, and he will surely be in a dangerous position unless he strives to counteract the influence his words have carried. As a people, we must use great caution. As we do not engage in the war and pray for union and preach in regard to union, suspicions are aroused. If one like Brother Ross expresses sentiments not fully comprehended, but taken that he favors the South, this people will be branded as secessionists. And in this excited state of the people, but a word would set them on fire and destroy our safety. Brother Ross's views are not correct in regard to the institution of slavery. The influence of teachers upon the body has not been right. They have not made known their decided faith and taken a firm stand that all might understand their position and know where to find them. These uncertain teachers, who are unwilling to venture and bear any responsibility, had better remain in silence until they can tell the time of night and lead God's people safely and feed them with clean provender, throughly winnowed. These uncertain teachers have nourished the elements of disunion and confusion. Each should look well to his own soul and rule his own spirit. If each would do this and watch self as eagerly as he watches his brethren, the elements of union would exist in the heart, and every separating bar would be broken to fragments. Hearts would flow together like two drops of water. Then there would be power and strength in the ranks of Sabbath keepers, far exceeding anything we have yet seen. We are living in a most solemn period. Satan and evil angels are arrayed against us with mighty power. The world is on their side to help them, and the most lamentable fact is that professed Sabbath keepers, claiming to believe important, solemn truth, unite their forces with the combined influences of the powers of darkness to distract and hinder or tear down that which he, Christ, has required his chosen instruments to build up. Some do not work directly to tear down, but indirectly. They look on with indifference, express doubts, suspicion, fears, and need greater evidence than a doubting Thomas. They will not, or do not, put their hand to the work with zeal and exert their energies to build up. Their influence is recorded as one which retards the work of advance and reform among God's people. Said the angel, "Those who do not gather with Christ scatter abroad." There is no such thing as a neutral position. Everyone has influence, and his influence tells for or against. Individuals have stood ready to oppose every step of advance of God's people as God in his providence has led them. And those who would venture out have their hearts saddened and distressed by the lack of union and action on the part of their ministering brethren. Ellen White's visit to Norridgewock, Maine. Your uncle and aunt, Mary White Chase, were at the meeting at Norridgewock. They both enjoyed the meeting much. We had an excellent meeting. I spoke 4 times during the meeting in public. Your father spoke 4 times. We both had freedom in bearing our testimonies. There is an excellent class of people raised up in Norridgewock, and in Athens, a new meeting house has been built in both these places. We are so earnestly engaged in the work and so much to do, our time and strength is all taken up with labor. There are many here, Norridgewock, Maine, that are upon the point of deciding to identify themselves with this people, but have not strength to decide. Many young here need to be converted. Oh, we do feel so earnest, so anxious to see the work of God progress. I have spoken 1.5 hours this afternoon and am quite weary. Things move slowly here, yet we are not discouraged. We expect to see a good work accomplished in this state. I labored all through the meeting at Norridgewock, unable to hold up my head only while standing upon my feet. I had a burden for the people which pressed me to say considerable. Released June 22, 1971.